sessions of October 2, October 16, October 30, November 3,
November 13, November 20. All via teleconference.
I move that we certify to all of those, best of our knowledge, and no individual member dissenting, that only such matters authorized for discussion in the executive session on the board bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which these sessions were convened, were heard, discussed, or considered by the executive committee.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm trusting that you said things that I can agree with, but I'll say aye.
For certification of executive session.
And I absolutely agree with that. Thank you.
Approval of minutes of October 23rd.
So moved.
Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Approval of executive session minutes of October 30, November 3, November 13, and November 20. I would accept a motion.
I'll move. Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Information item, quarterly meeting with the RAC.
What we've done is divided this up into three parts, the accomplishments, lessons learned, and ongoing concern, and we're going to kind of break up who's going to talk about the accomplishment, and we're not going to read these 19 things to you. First of all, as I said, Candace Walsh, who's the vice chair for District of Columbia, had surgery yesterday, so she thought she might be here, but as I said, she's still recuperating.
Still on drugs.
Yeah, that I shouldn't have said that. Anyway.
I knew what you meant.
Okay. I'm going to be doing some of the things that she was scheduled to do. The first thing that I wanted to talk about was the formal recommendation that we did for improving metro service in the Mid-South District of Columbia corridors. And I think that that was useful both to DDOT and to WMATA because we were able to get a lot of input thanks to his getting his deputy to speak with us. And it turns out, based on the latest ridership figures, that 14th Street line, I think, has the highest ridership, at least in the city. So we think that was really right on point. Karen, you want to talk about it too?
Sure. Thank you, Carol. The RAC made formal recommendations to the board on the proposed 2014-2015 operating and capital budgets, and we really appreciated that opportunity to engage and to provide feedback from the public standpoint as well. One of the most important things that the Finance and Budget Committee accomplished this year was also looking at fare structures and fare simplification. We didn't complete our work, so we weren't able to provide a formal report to the board, but we hope to accomplish this in 2016.
Barbara.
Okay. Signage. Thank you. We were very fortunate, we felt, to be in on very early discussions of new signage proposals. And we devoted a lot of time of one of our monthly meetings to giving feedback and then also just afterwards collected and made a formal report, which we gave forwarded to you. With a lot of suggestions. We gave it a great deal of thought, and we're pretty proud of what we had accomplished, we felt, anyway. And even though one of them was that the notion of cardinal directions we weren't exactly enthralled with, and not as a standalone way. To say something's westbound or eastbound isn't always as meaningful unless you attach something else to it. But that was one of the formal proposals that we formal feedback mechanisms we did this year. We also provided input on the proposed public participation plan and the customer care plan. That was primarily done in our monthly meeting format, And again, we always appreciate hearing about some strategic things such as those and provided the input that we had at the time.
Karen, you're going to talk about the warning.
Sure, thank you. The Governance Committee worked really hard with the RAC members as well as the WMATA board in revising the RAC bylaws. We feel that the updates that we've made to the document will improve the operations of the RAC significantly. So thank you so much for approving that document.
And I have to add something. I appreciate the comments that were made about my success as chair, but one of the reasons I was so successful was because of the doggedness, if I may say so, the bulldoggedness at times of the vice chairs. Karen Lynch was the moving force behind the governance bylaws. She made us work through it. At times it was boring and troublesome, but she really forced us to work through it, and I think we've got a document that's going to really help move the rock ahead, so I want to give her a shout out for that. We are, again, are appreciative. We've heard, I think, last year about three different presentations on a new payment electronic plan, and we've had an opportunity to make informal comment with it. We had the first iteration, I think, was at a committee meeting that I attended, and then we suddenly realized this was important enough that we needed to talk about it in a full RAC meeting. And then the third time was when the project manager came to a committee meeting. So we hoped, right now, as far as I know, as of the last meeting, none of our members happened to be participants in the pilot. But we are really looking forward. Again, it's an opportunity to work in hand with the staff as this development moves forward. So we're really going to pay attention to that.
Before we leave that, Doug, I wonder if it's too late to ask the staff to include in that two members picked by the RAC.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it sound like we were overlooked. As far as I know, and, you know, I asked specifically at the December meeting, right, James? As far as I know, I think people didn't, I think almost three, I think there are about 2,800 people who were selected, and I got the impression people either didn't apply or they might not have met the criteria, because don't you have to enter and exit at the pilot stations?
That's correct.
Yeah, but maybe that's something that the...
I think it would be incredibly helpful if you did have somebody.
Because we have a lot of interest. Right. I think it's interesting. It's trying to get an engagement from members to get them hooked on a particular thing, and I think this is something that engages the interest of people. So if there's any way for them to check that, we will definitely do that.
And I will add...
I can't tell you how important we think it is, both that you and the Access Committee have strong inputs into the new electronic payments efforts. It's got to include as strong a possible participation by both committees for feedback. We often kind of go a little bit off the rails about not having as robust a user interface at the front end as we need. And I want to make sure, and I think the rest of the board does as well, that you're fully represented and fully engaged in this effort. It's our bread and butter, and most importantly, it's how the customer is going to interface with this authority for another generation.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, if I may, my understanding is that RAC members were invited to participate in the pilot, but none of the members met the criteria. There are certain parameters, you know, entries and exits and things, so none of the members met that criteria. But we are getting their input along the way and keeping them informed of what's going on with the pilot program.
Maybe perhaps we could get some of the people who are in the pilot to come meet with the RAC at some point.
That'd be a great idea.
Yeah, that'd be a great idea. Because, I mean, this is just my personal concern. John Pasek and James can attest, I'm kind of a computer user. I know what I want it to do, but essentially I want it to be like a light switch. I want it to do it, and I don't want to know why, how, you know, anything like that. So my concern is that people who are less technologically sophisticated are not in this pilot. because basically one of the criteria was that they have a certain amount of technical, skills, I thought. And so hopefully, as I said, the project manager has been very good about briefing us and keeping us apprised along the way. And I think, as I recall the project plan, there's enough time for evaluation, so there shouldn't be a rush to say, okay, we've tested it with 3,000 people who are technically competent, now we could blow it up to the whole population. So I think there are enough decision points or along the way to keep that from happening. But that's my one concern, is people who do not have access to all this technology at their fingertips and who are not, they know how to do certain things, but they don't know how to do all of the things they might need to know how to do to fully utilize the system. So,
and particularly, it's important about the 20-30% of bus riders who are unbanked.
Right.
And having them as part of this process is what we have to learn about having this be a payment system for all.
You just gave me an idea. I wrote a note to myself, do not wander astray, but you just gave me an idea which I will pursue. I, in my spare time, I teach an ESL class, and one of the people in our class wanted to buy something, a payment, some kind of time payment, but they didn't have a bank account. I think there are organizations like Casa de Maryland and maybe other organizations who work with unbanked people.
Yeah,
and
but maybe there has to be conscious linkages that we...
Right. Well, I'm just thinking that might be something that I'm willing to do a little bit of work and turn it over to other people, is to see whether there are organizations that might be able to work with that, because that was the solution I found for this particular person. So, okay. Karen, back to you.
Great, thanks. The Maryland jurisdiction met with the Maryland board members earlier in the year. The meeting was very fruitful and productive. We focused primarily on transit issues specific to Maryland, but at the same time, we believe that we've set the precedent for these types of meetings for the rest of the RAC.
And
don't be bashful. Don't be bashful about just setting it up, just
okay.
Doing it.
Thank you.
Something I participated in was a meeting in late September between the Blue Line riders and various people from the WMATA staff. Lynn Bowersox was there, Rob Troop, and several others, quite a few others. And the members of the public who had first attended one of our monthly RAC meetings when Lynn was also there and talking about the startup of the Silver Line. And so that it was I think it was a great opportunity. There was a lot of sharing of information and points of view. There was a lot of listening that went on. I think the staff members made a real clear, sincere effort to understand what the riders were running into on the Blue Line. And we're really speaking about the Virginia side of Blue Line, people who are either coming from or whose destination is there. And I know that there were some more incidental things that came up that Lynn took back and was actually able to make some changes on, just about announcements and something. But knowing that most were on we need to wait and see what a significant period of time has, elapsed, the fall quarter, and see what the numbers bring by then. And we were surprised to learn even at that time that blue ridership was lighter than even silver at that point. So it was a good meeting.
I am really, really proud, frankly, and hubris about this accomplishment of really working with the AAC in not just a perfunctory manner. As you said, I have attended a lot of their committee meetings, attended the full meeting. We had at least two meetings that we had a joint presentation, which we found helpful, and we frankly rode along with them on the pre-opening tour of the Silver Line, which was very beneficial to get and hear their comments firsthand. As a matter of fact, going to the next issue of the orientation process, it was from their staff that we got the idea of using bios, putting bios together that would be given out to members of the RAC you know, at the first meeting, so you kind of see who was sitting next to you in a meeting, a lot of what the Vermonta board does, but also the AAC. So I think that there's going to be more and more opportunities for participation, particularly this next year when some of the proposed fare structure and service adjustments will affect the disability community in particular. So I'm really looking forward to that. And as I said, the orientation process, talked about it at the meeting. This was the thing that Candace Walsh was the bulldog on. Even though she decided, because of the pressures of her job, not to apply or you know, stand for reappointment, she was working up until the time she literally went under the knife to get this orientation package together. And I must say that those efforts were really, really enhanced by the participation of both Jennifer and James. So we are really pleased that by the time the first meeting occurs in January, RAC members will have some sense of what it is that they're supposed to be doing, and by the second meeting they should be having a good sense of committee structures, et cetera. So we're really think that that's going to make a big difference in how effective we can be as quickly as possible. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, we also refine and adopted ground rules. We have public participation procedures, which are sort of, I guess, similar to your operating procedures, and they're not in the bylaws, but we already have those rules that talk about what the kind of the protocol of the meeting structures and things like that will be.
And to add and piggyback on to what Carol just said, we really had a very strong governance committee this year and outstanding leadership under Carol. We established 4 standing committees: budget and finance, customer service, governance, program planning, and projects, in addition to our leadership team. So when we reconvene in January, we're going to hit the ground running.
And I appreciate the governance committee making that change about the acceptance of rather than the approval of the program. And I must admit, I'm going to be doing a lessons learned that I'm sending to the incoming committee people. And one of the things I wish I'd done is read things more carefully. So really,
that's important life choice.
Yes, that's true. I usually do, but really appreciate it, because the difference in wording between acceptance and approval is going to keep the BRAC from getting mired down into, you know, who does what to whom and who has the authority and power. So I really appreciate that. And I think that is just about, the other thing that we were appreciative of is we... Barbara and I, in particular, did get to look at the evaluation of candidates for the staff coordinator. We had a chance to look at and put some input into a revised PD. I was on the hiring team that actually interviewed people that brought us James Jackson, of that I feel very proud. And we also helped develop and hosted a presentation on parliamentary procedure, which was done by Sarah Merkel, and that was another agenda topic for our joint meeting of the AAC, and there were some people who were invited. All of some Vermonta staff were invited, and some of them came to that procedure, to that presentation. I was personally asked to provide comment on an OIG draft report involving escalator reliability, and I had the opportunity to make some special meetings, and I appreciated the RAC being a presence at those meetings. And that's... Barbara, I think you had the last one.
I did attend a lot of bus hearings. A lot of RAC members did. We actually had some bus hearings, one that you did right here in this room, as I recall.
Right.
But, we had good attendance. And I think it's a really good education for us to see what's provided to the public and to hear what they specifically say. And I also attended, Mary Hines was at a Metroway opening out on Route 1, and that was a nice follow-up to the Silver Line inauguration that we also attended.
I want to just talk about a few lessons learned things, provide the early orientation. I think we've really talked about that. The key ones are we need to maybe consider holding RAC meetings in other jurisdictions. You know, as easy as this is to get to for most people, it would probably be nice to be a presence in Virginia and Maryland for some of the RAC meetings, because we have never been able to, with the exception of a couple of times, have more than a handful of people come to our RAC meetings, so I think that would help on that.
A handful of the public, right.
I'm sorry. The other thing that I wanted to ask you to maybe consider in the next year would be to have people pre-qualified as RAC appointees, so that if someone drops out, you can easily have a kind of a little pool of people to replace it. I think that's done with the AAC, and the reason I think it's good is because at some time we managed to accomplish a respectable amount of work this year, but at times we were missing about four or five people. So I think that, and sometimes it would skew so that you didn't have good jurisdictional representation on all committees because of that. So I think that that would be a good governance issue to work with. And I think the only other thing I want to say before to give time for the ongoing concerns is that I think that we have done a decent job of doing the working committees, and I think the bylaws change, which now puts these standing committees into a permanent setting, will help us to get people to do as you do, do the work in the committees, bring a finish or a developed work product to the full council for discussion. I think that will enable the council to be much more productive. And since I am leaving, I wanted Barbara and Karen to talk about ongoing concerns. I thought that would be appropriate.
Well, I would like to talk just briefly about, you know, we talked about continuous improvement of service and communications about service. One of the concerns that I have, because I do come from the Blue Lion crowd, is that in spite of the meeting that I described where there was a lot of good communication and sharing, I think there is still very much an unsettled dissatisfaction among the Blue Lion riders that they're not getting equal treatment by WMATA. Whether they have chosen to stick with it or abandoned, you know, regardless of that, even if it appears that the abandonment rate is not any different on the Blue Line than it is on others, so the Blue Line people are staying with Metro. But
in spite of it,
I think so. One, and we know that to some extent, people live where they live. They may. Part of the judgment in picking a place was Metro access. I'm one of them. I never dreamed that a couple years into my residence in Alexandria that I would no longer have the same kind of service that I had. And it's not just about doubling the headway from 6 to 12. It's more than that. It's the crowding, and the numbers are showing and have shown just about from the beginning that the Blue Line riders that are on the Virginia side are getting they're just much more crowded, which is what the complaints are. It's not just that they have to wait 6 minutes longer. It's that sometimes the crowding is to the point of not feeling safe, and the trains are too full to accommodate people that have strollers or wheelchairs or just people like me that have just a little bit of a limitation on mobility. I personally, I was off for surgery and driving when I did work part of the time since the Silver Line opened. But the times I have ridden, you know, one of the first times I was personally pushed onto a train, and the only thing that kept me from hitting the ground was it was so crowded that I fell onto somebody's suitcase. And that was just even trying to get on a Blue Line to go to the yellow, doing the path that the rerouting that they wanted me to take. And the other thing is that that sometimes if people have been persuaded to try the yellow, sometimes they've given up an 8-minute wait for blue, and then they get there, and there was an unannounced problem with the yellow where I had a 10-minute wait or a 15-minute wait at another time. And so if people are hesitant to make that switch. And I think that the end product of any issues or crowding means that sometimes that six-minute delay takes you to 24 because you can't board when it does get there, or if one is taken out of service. And I'm not just trying to complain. I want to say that I think we need to find a way collectively to reward the Blue Line riders in some way for being, you know, persistent in riding, whether it's more 8-car trains, because that would lessen the crowding. Certainly they'd like more trains. We know that's not an easy thing to do, but something, whether it's the newer cars, the handing out tchotchkes at a station in Springfield, I don't know, but I don't know that they feel like they're going to get much of anything. And, you know, and I think rubbing salt into the wound was this wonderful Tyson's idea. This is very creative, but Springfield opened a new, they opened their mall, reopened it, grand opening, and you know, we are not, there's no, nobody trying to get customers there. So I'd like to hope that I can help find some ways that are doable that can give the Blue Riders a sense of somebody caring. Thanks for listening to all my complaints, even though I said I wasn't just complaining.
A suggestion, you know, board members tend to have things that they spend more time on than other board members might. In the Blue Line, Mary Hines has been more interested in ideas and feedback, and Ward has paid attention to the Blue Line as well. That some outreach to Mary that she'll probably try and break my hand for doing that. But if there's a champion on the board for a particular issue, the board tends to pay more attention to it because it's a board member, and engaging Mary more in the issues around Blue Line with suggestions would probably be a useful strategy.
Yeah, and she has been a wonderful partner to the RAC in every step of the way. We've had a meeting with her about a year ago, so before this change. I happily take on that suggestion.
I would. I'd point to Jim, but Jim's leaving us.
Oh. But I'll still send her an email about the Blue Line.
Okay.
Have they actually opened that up?
Yeah, they did just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Maybe a month now. Yeah.
It pales in comparison.
No, it does. Absolutely. I mean, I expect if I suggested that, people would laugh to say that.
The coverage.
Oh,
that it got,
but it pales in comparison to
the kind of.
Well, what's that, Tyson?
Yeah, but it's a big step up from what it had been.
Yeah.
We appreciate your comments, and you know, we certainly there's been a lot of investment in customer satisfaction, and I know that Lynn and her team and everyone is really focused clearly on that. But you raise it in a context for me that felt like customer acknowledgement and customer recognition as opposed to satisfaction. And I think to me that there's a couple of different. Number one is, are you satisfied? Question is, do you feel acknowledged? And I don't know that they don't, and I don't know that we don't try. I'm not suggesting that by any stretch, but I wonder if there are ways that we can be more aware of appreciation of our customers in general. And for me, thoughts around that as a way that an examination that we need to do of are we not just making sure they're satisfied, but are we really acknowledging our customers in the way that they should be felt? And again, it's a question to you, and one that maybe we should ask of ourselves, but I'd like to suggest that maybe some thought around that in terms of how we approach our customers might be valuable.
And you know, I gave kudos to being discussing on Sunday morning because I thought that I had been working in the industry for 30 years, and I thought that when the news came on about the war, you know, working great, mm-hmm. I thought he did an excellent job of saying, mm-hmm. tell them the truth. Okay, folks, this is what happened. You'll have to make some other changes. Do something
before you leave. I mean, in other words, it was no, you know, we told it like it was, and I think people appreciated that, and I don't know what the Twitter and all that showed, but I suspect that because it was obviously Metro has no control over the old aging pipes in the city, but also because there was information was right out there, it didn't attempt to minimize the potential for a mess in the morning. I think that's goes to what you're saying, the nuance. It's a nuance, but it's very important. You acknowledge that something is amiss, tell what you're doing to fix it, give people other options, which is what he did. You know, I think that's really an important.
Just to piggyback on, like,
yeah.
And I won't name specific ones, but there some retailers, you enjoy going into the experience, even though you're paying the same dollars you would someplace mm-hmm. else, and sometimes a little more, but you just enjoy and appreciate how the staff makes you feel mm-hmm. as you're having that experience. And I just wonder if there are additional ways that we can bring that to our...
You know, I think Richard Soros, I read his, what I guess will be his last Metro thing in the Express this morning coming down here, and I thought it was interesting that he basically gave, you know, he talked about the accomplishments, he talked about the safety being, you know, first order business, but he also did talk about customer care. And I think, you know, now that the corner has been turned on safety, you know, obviously you have to be continuously vigilant, but I think Metro is doing the right thing to focus on this issue of customer care, which, as I agree, not only improving service, but acknowledging when, you know, you're asking people to make a sacrifice for, you know, service, so.
I mentioned the water main break. I was caught up on the Orange Line that morning, and I could say I have never been on a train in a circumstance like that were the best announcements I've ever heard. And I think it, you know, relates back to what you've helped us do in terms of what the people need to know, when do they need to know it. The operator of that train, every station stop, went through the whole pitch. Here's what's happening. Here's what you need to do. Here's why it's happening. It was really light years ahead of where we might have been in the past. And we thank you for your help. And getting
that's
that
great
point through to people who run the trains, that they're running them for the benefit of the customers.
Right. Thank you. Karen, you...
Right. And I will only add that, again, the Governance Committee has really strengthened the RAC, I believe. But one area that we really need to focus on in 2016 is balancing the RAC as a voice and advocate for riders versus the RAC as a creature of the WMATA board. And I say this only because, you know, when I came to the RAC, I thought I was going to come and change the world. And then when I got here, really, really, I had a better understanding of just the constraints that the WMATA board and everyone else has to deal with on a daily basis, just balancing safety with customer satisfaction and the budget constraints as well. I really have a greater appreciation of what you do here in the Washington metropolitan area. But I think we don't do a good job in communicating that to the public, and hopefully in 2016 we can work towards those types of initiatives as well.
I'd make a comment that the importance of the organization and coming and having the RAC come back from a period of a kind of rolling chaos, or the kind of dissent or fractionalization, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
that began to make the RAC ineffective in advocacy. Huge amount of progress about eliminating that and getting a coherent focus that everybody can speak to has been really important. It's now like safety. Once you've gotten past safety, you can tackle other things. And in this case, I think it's really, if you're all together, that you aggressively tackle agenda items that you think need to be heard. We appreciate the cooperative relationship, but I would tell you that the board would always be comfortable about being pushed about issues, the customer and the writer's perspective. So encouraging you to continue to be aggressive about those issues. We're not negative in our reactions about stuff that we need to continue to fix. We're a work in progress as an authority, and you're an important part of that work. One of the things that I'd like to suggest as an agenda going forward is to, you know, the several board members have voiced their concern about public hearings where 10 people show up. We've done a huge amount of advertising, and they're on the buses, and they're in stations, and all of this stuff. We have handouts and flyers, and still 10 people show up for a public hearing or public outreach. And that's led to some attempts to rethink how we structure public hearings, where we put them, how we manage them, how we get more enthusiasm and involvement in them. And I think that's an incredibly important part of your work as a RAC as well, because we want writers at those hearings in numbers sufficient to have a louder voice. And I'd encourage you to pick that as a topic at some point about this year, about re-engineering our public hearings process. We're rethinking that, or trying to, and you can have, I think, a powerful voice.
A question I have is some of that, though, of the structure of public hearings dictated by various rules that I hear you recite at the start of them?
Yeah, but we have all of those rules that we have to comply with. They're adequate, but they're not sufficient.
Okay.
They're required, and we have to meet those tests to be having a legal public hearing. But that's not sufficient. We can be legally sufficient and totally incompetent. I mean, it's
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those are floors. They're not the right things that the rest of the things that we could be doing here.
And Mr. Chair, if I may also add, with the board's recent approval of the public participation plan, public hearings will be one component of our public outreach, and the RAC certainly helped us shape the PPP, as we affectionately call it. And so, you know, moving forward, we would obviously welcome the continued input into the public participation process. Are we going to the right places? Are we reaching the right people that we want to reach for certain projects and things like that? And so we look forward to continuing that dialogue with the RAC, especially in terms of the public participation plan. Thank you.
If I could just add one additional suggestion for considering as you evaluate the public participation plan, if it's feasible. No one likes to go anywhere in the evening after all day. It's the winter time often when we're doing these things. It's dark. The weather's frequently bad. It just is a formula for I can't do it. And if it would seem that maybe we could look at other days of the week, potentially Saturday morning. Now, that won't accommodate everyone's experience. Maybe Saturday afternoon, or maybe that's not feasible, but I'm only suggesting that we don't put limits on what we look at, because the idea to be able, it's a sacrifice to come, period. And then to make it compounded at the end of someone's workday when it's dark and cold and they've got to get home almost guarantees minimal turnout. So I guess getting some customer view on what is likely to be a better opportunity. No perfect answer, but I appreciate the exploration on it.
And a part of the goal is to also go where the people are. So, you know, if it's at the stations, if we're going to catch them on the way home or going into work, learning what those best opportunities are so people aren't always having to come to us. I know that's one of the primary goals, is to make sure we are going to where the people are.
We have the people that don't have rail.
Right.
And if this will get you by bus.
Yes.
Well, then it's not possible. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what we're doing, is to make sure we learn that.
Be inaccessible.
Yeah, I do think that's an important thing. One of the most valuable public hearings that I ever went to was one that I really didn't want to go to, frankly, because for the very same reason that you said, I'd had a long day as a, for whatever reason, it was cold, I didn't feel like going. I went. It was the best hearing that was held at the, I think, the Dorothy Height Library in Northeast Washington. And what my takeaway from that was, the people there know as much about the bus service as probably many WMATA staffers. So
some,
we got to...
Some more.
They could recite chapter and verse. What was the problem with buses? What was the problem with the cleanliness of the Minnesota Avenue Station we're talking about specifically? And I was thinking, we need to figure out a way to harness the people in the... people and bring them to the public square. Do you know what I mean? In other words, they were coming out to a place that they felt familiar with. They were coming out ostensibly to talk about the bus changes, but they really used it as an opportunity to talk about other things. And that's the kind of valuable resource that WMATA needs to grab onto. One of the things I was thinking about is maybe having town hall or listening sessions not specifically devoted to a particular issue, and also maybe taking the list of people who do attend, because usually... It seems to me you don't have to sign up at the public. Somehow getting those people and sending them the information, and maybe they'll bring their friends and stuff like that. That might be one way of doing it. Because, as I said, there's a lot of intelligent people out there, and they're intelligent because they ride every day. They don't have cars. You know, they don't have work-at-home options. So they know these systems better than anybody else because they have to use them every day. So I think if we can harness those kinds of resources, I think it would be to the benefit of WMATA. Really.
Agree.
Yeah, another point thinking forward, this is going to be a very tough year in terms of the budget, in terms of the need to get our capital program renewed, in terms of some new officials in the region. We've got to reinstitute the support base and the credibility that there are people out here who do depend on this for a lot of different reasons. Otherwise, we'll kind of wind up at the wrong end of some decision making, and it may be for issues beyond our control, but we'd like to do better.
Anyway, I want to thank you. It's been great. It's funny. Somebody was asking me, what will I do with my Wednesdays and Thursdays?
We certainly hope you'll get home.
Right. We still have some more things to do to finish up the orientation. But thank you very much. I think just the final thing about it. One of the things that I would say about WMATA staff in particular is, even when we disagree, I mean, there's a way to, we have to make a decision early on. There's no point in fighting about it, like saying, okay, what do I want? Do I want to have somebody kiss my ring, or do I want to, get this done? And I think that working in partnership with WMATA staff, even when we didn't necessarily agree, Concert for Valor being one of them, we still did it in a professional way. And I think that's just really the only useful way to do things, frankly. So.
On behalf of the board, I want to thank you again for a great year. I think this has been one of the most significant years in my memory about the RAC and what it brings to the table. Organization, professionalism, production of real products that the authority can use. I think just do more.
Yeah, you laid down a challenge. You threw down the gauntlet a couple of years ago about work products. Thanks
a
lot.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
You too.